Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, we've got Hillary definitely on the left. We have Donald Trump presumably on the right. We have a runaway judiciary branch. We have an overreaching executive branch. We have an entrenched legislative branch. So the question has to be asked, is the original vision, the original intent of our founding fathers now dead and buried as we have been rolling into the 21st century here in the great experiment known as the United States of America? So today we're going to go down this road and we're going to ask that question. Is it over? Is this notion of a constitutional republic by the consent of the governed, a social contract, as we say, as we study back over the years, is it dead and over? Are we morphing into some other kind of a form of government that maybe we could call it an oligarchy? That's when you have a governance that's basically just a small group of very, very powerful people. I don't think we're that close to being a dictatorship, which a lot of people would had made that charge about, oh, Obama's going to trash the Constitution and forget limited government and overreaching executive power. And then the next thing you know, we're going to have a dictatorship on our hands. No, it can't happen that quickly. At least I don't think so here in the United States of America. So today we'll go down these roads and I'll introduce my guest in just a second. But we are exactly 1 week out from, well, we're 2 weeks out from the election today, and I've got my election picks out there on Facebook. I'm putting them up on the webpage today at c2atoday.com. All of my picks, I'm a citizen of the United States as well as here in North Carolina and Raleigh, North Carolina. So if you're in North Carolina, especially, and if you're in the Raleigh-Durham area where I live, now, all the picks all the way through from the president on down are all now available on my Facebook page. So you can go there, c2atoday.com. Is the moniker on Facebook. So facebook.com/C2A today. And I'll have those up on the blog today at C2A today.com. And this is my, as a former Chicagoan, this is my way every 2 years of voting multiple times, especially here in the Raleigh, North Carolina area. Cause, well, I've gotten to know a lot of people over the years, and Call to Action, God has given us great favor. So, I literally will run into people every 2 years at the polls that walk in there with, well, my list. So I'm like, okay, there you go. I guess I'm legally voting more than once, if you can even make that statement. That's 2 weeks from today is the election. 1 week from today, Called to Worship, of course, our annual worship event, our only fundraiser of the year. It's going to be just an incredible night. Still giving away tickets from that. So if you'd like to call in today as I'm discussing these very, very important issues of the original intent and our Constitution and the founding fathers with my guest, then just feel free to call in. All we need is your name, how many tickets you want, and your email address, and I'll do the rest for you. So trying to make it super easy for you. 866-348-7884 is the number. 866-348-7884 if you want to get some free tickets to Call to Worship, or 866-34-TRUTH. Well, full disclosure, cards on the table. As you know, every month we have another professor from the King's College on up in New York City. God is doing an incredible work up there at this small Christian college right in Manhattan, literally a block over from the New York Stock Exchange. My daughter happens to be one of the freshmen there, and it's just been an incredible blessing to have not only my daughter up at King's, but the professors coming on every month to help us go down some of these difficult roads and ask very important questions. So today, no different. Dr. David Corbin is with us today, teaches courses in American political thought and politics and literature at the King's College. His areas of academic interest also include political philosophy, comparative government, and international politics. He has a bachelor's and a master's in political science from the University of New Hampshire and his PhD at Boston University. And he came to the King's College in 2007. It's great to have Dr. David Corbin on the show. David, how are you? Welcome.
I'm great, Steve. Thank you for having me on the show. It's a great honor to be another professor from King's.
Yeah, it's been a great blessing. So we're excited to have you on. Well, this is kind of a heavy question and a big discussion, and we'll unpack that as we go here during the show and the whole hour, David. But how did you end up at King's? You know, obviously very well educated, a lot going on in your life and all the writing that you've done at the Federalist website and all the other things. How'd you end up at King's?
So I had actually stepped out of teaching for a year or two. I had taught at the University of New Hampshire for about a decade in the late 90s and early 2000 dots, and went down to D.C. to work for the Charles Koch Foundation, trying to expand their faculty network, primarily trying to take a, what was a libertarian-esque organization and make the case that there were other good thinkers out there that might be supported by Koch Foundation causes. And the more and more I tried to move money in the direction of worthy teachers and faculty members across the country, the more I missed teaching, the more I missed being able to be in a classroom and have the opportunity to talk about these, you know, great important questions. So I looked around for jobs that were open in the field of political philosophy. I found that, like usual, there wasn't much out there, and I'd always kept an eye on what was going on at the King's College. Someone from my church back in New Hampshire had given me a flyer some 3 years prior, and a job opened up there. I sent my CV, and Marvin Olasky, who was provost at the time, invited me to come north for an interview, and sooner than later, I came on full-time teaching primarily American political thought. So that was kind of the little part of the journey back then, and haven't regretted it. It's not the easiest place to live. It's expensive, as you know well, paying tuition and all the rest, but there's a lot of great work to be done in New York City, and there are a lot of great colleagues here who make it that much easier to do that. So it's a really good thing going on here, and I'm just so feel so happy that I'm blessed to be here to be able to do it. So.
Yeah, and there was just a recent poll that came out, some studies that I saw in this article the other day, talking about actually the interesting organization, the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, did an annual report of U.S. attitudes towards socialism. I'm leading to something here, and then we're going to hit a break, and we'll come back and talk about our subject for the rest of the hour. But talking about, I mean, these young people that you have an opportunity to engage with every week there at the King's College, 80% of baby boomers and 91% of elderly Americans believe that communism was and still is a problem in the world today, while just 55% of millennials say the same. The survey also revealed a general lack of historical knowledge. Listen to this. According to the report, one-third, or 32% of millennials believe that more people were killed under George W. Bush than under Joseph Stalin. So I have a couple of questions when we come back, David, just about the students that you're encountering and teaching there on a daily basis at the King's College. What are you running into, and what are you seeing as you kind of open up political philosophy, political thought, and political history, especially in the American context, with these future leaders of America? This is Steve Noble. It is Call to Action Radio. We'll be back with Dr. David Corbin. Then we'll get into our main topic. Is the Founding Fathers' vision dead? We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio, talking to another one of our friends at the King's College up in New York City. The King's College, incredible small Christian liberal arts school right there in the middle of Manhattan. I think about 70 years old now, and God's just doing an amazing work there. Really intense environment. But if you have a son or a daughter, a grandson, a granddaughter, and they have an interest in the big city, which my daughter Amelia is up there at the King's College, and since she was 14, she's been talking about living in either New York City or London. And we always just thought, well, you know, it's just a childhood fancy, whatever. But it stayed with her, and we trust that God has placed that heart for living in the big city within her. She wants to be a culture-shaping type person. Amen. That's what we've raised them to be. And a place like King's College, just an incredible opportunity. Not right for everybody, but for certain people, it's like you ring a certain bell, just like Jesus said, the sheep hear his voice. Once you find out about the King's College, it for us, it clicked immediately, and for other people, you go, nah, not for me. But if it is for you, it will absolutely blow you away. So I want to make sure you check it out. TKC.edu is the website, The King's College, TKC.edu. And we have the pleasure today. Dr. David Corbin is with us, who teaches American political thought and politics at the King's College. And David, I think you, before we hit the break, I was just reading from this recent report where 32% of millennials were thinking that George W. Bush killed more people than Joseph Stalin. So just remarkable, the lack of education out there, especially in the political world, for our young people. But what are you encountering when these students get to King's College in terms of what they know, what they understand, and to have their eyes open when they're being taught by somebody such as yourself? What are you seeing in our future leaders today?
Well, I definitely see, even among King students, a level of political and civic illiteracy. And I think that has a lot to do with how we teach history. And it's oftentimes, by the time you're 18, you've taken six or seven history classes in your life, and you believe you either A, know it all, or B, are sick of memorizing dates and names, et cetera. So you kind of tune off, and you tune out to the whole importance of politics, of history. And so one of the things that I try to do at the beginning of every class I teach at the King's College is to make the case that history isn't some disconnected reality from your own, that you are part of a long and important and eternal moral narrative, and that this is not something two-dimensional that I'm going to ask you to memorize a set of dates or facts this semester, but I'm going to ask you to think of yourself as an important human being who's going to play an important role purposefully in your life by the choices that you make. I think that type of historical training, where you tie history to an individual's life, you show them that this is really your story, that you're part of it, you're not watching the world as it turns, but you're part of it as it turns, is essential to really beginning to be open to the importance of becoming civically literate and politically literate.
Yeah, what a great point. And I have an opportunity, a real pleasure. I teach a two-semester course on the Constitution and civics to high school-age homeschoolers here in the Raleigh area. And once they begin to make the connection that, hey, this whole thing is going to get handed over to you guys in not that long of a period of time, you start to see the lights come on. So to our main question today about the original intent of our founding fathers and the constitutional republic that they established, and I ask that kind of question, is it dead and buried? But where do we start with that, David? Because I think this is a concern for a lot of people in this country, whether they're conservatives or not. I'll leave that one alone. But I think a lot of people are concerned, can we ever get back to this kind of American experiment that our founding fathers designed, and I think really by the grace of God?
Well, it's not dead and buried, I think, on two fronts. It's not dead and buried in the fact that it was written on parchment, and we have the ability, if we want to see, to read through what was on that parchment, to read through their excellent thoughts on how difficult it is to live as a free people under a popular government, given all the distractions of the modern world. But secondly, I don't think that it's dead and buried in the sense that not only did they write these thoughts and ideas on paper, but they lived them out in practice. They showed us what it meant as a set of leaders to actually embody the principles that they say that are on parchment. So both in what they write and what they represent as real human beings, I think they give us a model that if we're going to get back to the type of republic that they wanted to give us, we can follow them in speech and in deed. Now, that's not going to be easy. That's not difficult because, of course, we've developed a whole another set of habits as we move forward from the foundation that they laid some over 200 years ago. But it is possible. Anything is possible, right? This is what I'm going back to with my freshman classes. You have it within your hands, your hearts, and your minds to make choices that matter for you, matter for those around you, and your larger political community. Don't bail out or simply think that you don't matter or the choices that you make won't matter. So you have an opportunity. Don't neglect that opportunity.
Yeah, and it's interesting. One of the recent studies out there showed that it was only about 14% of eligible adults, people 18 and above, non-felons, so on and so forth, only 14% of eligible adults actually voted for either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. I made the comment shortly after that, hey, you know what? Apathy and ignorance come at a high cost. And I think that's been something that's been so evident. So on a scale from 1 to 10, David, 10 being we're so far away, there's no way of getting back. How far away do you think we are in 2016 from the original intent of our founding fathers and the Constitution itself?
A 9. I mean, that may sound stark, but I'd make that number as close to 10 as I could. I think that this is a critical period. I think that our knowledge of Republican, lowercase r, Republican government is almost nil. Our desire to live in a post-constitutional setting where the political game is more about who gets what, when, and how, rather than constitutional principles that secure us our right to live the way that we want to under the rule of law, I think that's in great danger. So I think across the board, in terms of what we understand of the experiment that they set forth, we're in a bad place, and in the sense that we're not applying their understanding anymore, either as a voting electorate or as a leadership class in this country. So it's a really ugly predicament that we're in currently.
What about the role of just religion and morality? You know, you know this better than most. Many of the founding fathers wrote on that, spoke on that early on about this form of government being really tied to a people that are religious and moral by nature. Has that been a big factor in this country as we've moved further and further away, not only from God as a source of moral truth, but really a moral center of any kind?
Yeah, I think so. The best commentary on this, I think, is provided to us by the Frenchman Alexis de Tocqueville, who traces the history of democratic republicanism in America in his great work, and begins his whole exploration into American political history by pointing out the importance that the Puritans played in developing for us a strong moral core from which freedom could grow. He says to us that they tremendously believed in moral dependence, but it had to go hand in hand with political independence. Now, I think across the board, when you look at how we approach moral questions, we want moral independence. And that has led us, I think, to become more politically dependent upon a government, more needy as a people, less likely to look up to God, but then to look at ourselves thereafter as to what we can do to make our lives better and to make the lives better for other people around us.
Yeah, it's really it's invigorating for me as a follower of Christ when I'm reading and studying and learning about the founding fathers to see the brilliance of how they really molded the greatest political thought of the time, plus political history, with a biblical worldview and the understanding about man as a fallen creature, as a sinner, and how that all came together in the Constitution. A really, really amazing and quite challenging. When we come back from this break with Dr. David Corbin, what should we expect from our leaders? What should we expect from ourselves as citizens? And what should we expect from our politics? We have to have a baseline in order to move forward. We'll do that when we come back. Welcome back. This is Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. Great to be with you. As always, if you want to join us a week from today for Call to Worship, you can get your free tickets. Just go to our homepage, c2atoday.com. That's the letter C, the number 2, the letter A, c2atoday.com. You can register and get your free tickets there, or just give us a call and I'll take care of it for you. All I need is your name, your email address, and how many tickets you'd like. So you can give us a call right during the show today, and we'll do this each day until we get there next Tuesday. 866-348-7884 is the number here to get your free tickets for Call to Worship. 866-348-7884 or 866-34-TRUTH. We were just talking, and we're talking to Professor David Corbin, who teaches American political thought and politics and literature up at the King's College in New York City, tkc.edu, which cards on the table. My daughter is a freshman there. But even if she weren't, I would be taking advantage of this opportunity to tap into the type of wisdom and knowledge that God has placed into the King's College care. And it's really just been a great blessing each month to bring a different professor on. But we were just talking about, and I'm going to bring David back up in a second. We were just talking about Alexis de Tocqueville, who I'm sure will come up again, because we're going to ask the question as we move forward. What should we expect from our leaders? What should we expect from ourselves as citizens? And what should we expect from our politics? I mean, in general, as this form of government. Alexis de Tocqueville said the following: I sought for the greatness and genius of America in her commodious harbors and her ample rivers, and it was not there. In her fertile fields and boundless prairies, and it was not there. In her rich mines and her vast world commerce, and it was not there. Not until I went into the churches of America and heard her pulpits aflame with righteousness did I understand the secret of her genius and power. And that's where you probably heard this: America's great because America is good. And if she ever ceases to be good, she will cease to be great. An interesting tie-in and a really important point of the role of religion and morality and our form of government as a representative republic, allegedly of the people, by the people, and for the people. And of course, David, you use Democracy in America a lot in your classes with these students. Why is that such an important book for them to study and really for the rest of us to understand, too? And then we'll get into these major questions.
Yeah, I think it's an essential book for us to study, because I think that from a foreigner's standpoint, he is able to locate, as you just said in that great quote, just what made America tick. We have many advantages here, natural advantages, God's great bounty here. But if we look at everything that we do as a matter of our ability to make the world on our own a better place, we're going to direct our attention away from the true source of our liberty, the true source of our bounty, which is God, and we're going to direct it toward our own person, our own self, and eventually we're going to believe that it's within our capacity to do more than we can truly do. We'll look past the fallenness of our person. We'll look past the imperfection of our person, and we'll attempt these grand schemes that instead of helping to make people more free and more prosperous, more happy, live a more blessed existence, do the reverse in each case.
Yeah, amen to that, of course. So let's start with our leaders. This is obviously a very frustrating topic for a lot of people right now. As I often say on the air, David, that, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, this would have been a great Saturday Night Live skit. Today, it's actually the presidential election. So what should we expect from our leaders? Because I think this is a huge issue. People that love the Lord and people that I know in the conservative evangelical world, as well as the Southern Baptist world. I mean, my studio is on the campus of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, and you have guys here that love the Lord and don't agree on Donald Trump. So what should we expect from our leaders?
Yeah, I think that we should first expect that they have a clear sense as to what justice is, even to be able to put it in a sentence. Original founder, I think, who does this best is Thomas Jefferson, who says that the American experiment in self-government is about equal rights for all and special privileges for none. If we get nothing else right in terms of how we govern, but live and rule according to that principle, equal rights for all, special privileges for none, we would have set ourselves apart from the rest of government in world history. And why is that the case? Well, in the past, most governments that come into being to secure the interests of the powerful, of the connected. Life in government is a life in which you try to do what? Gain as many special privileges for your tribe, your people, those who are close to you. Jefferson wanted to reverse that logic of unjust government, but we've moved back toward that unjust government. And why have we done that? Because we've expected too much from government. We don't want it to simply secure our equal rights. We want it to do things. So when you tie that into the election in 2016, Hillary Clinton argues, if you elect me, I'll do X, Y, and Z for you, even if it hurts other people, even if I have to take away from other people. And I think that on the other hand, you have Republican candidates, Donald Trump just simply the latest, who talk in that same language. So I think that for a conservative/libertarian Republican candidate to be successful moving forward, they would have to make the case for equal rights for all, special privileges for none. And I think that the American people, just so tired and upset when they're not insiders, not having things done for them, but for the secure, the too big to fail types, would respond to that message. So I think that's the first thing we need from leaders. It's a clear sense as to what true justice is.
Now, why do you think we've ended up with so many corrupt leaders? Because I stream this live on Facebook, so people are watching me in the studio as we're having this discussion. And one person asked about, well, how did we end up in a place where so many of our elected leaders are essentially corrupt?
Well, I think that the system has changed. The system that we have put into place from the early 20th century onward has promised more to the American people. So starting with leaders like Woodrow Wilson, FDR, later progressives, there was a claim that more should be done for the American people than simply equal rights for all, special privileges for none. What government began to argue from the Great Depression onward is perhaps there's a way to organize our economy. Perhaps there's a way to ensure that everyone has a secured life from birth until death. So taking on these grand projects, more power is given to the federal government, more power is centralized, and then when an official runs for office, they're there in the hub of power, and they're told that if they're not using that power, they're not employing it to better people's lives, then they're not doing a good job. When in actuality, the earlier understanding of what the statesman was to do was to rule as you would be ruled over, not to want to be there forever, but to want to play your part so that you could go back and retire and live as a private citizen and have other like-minded individuals not hold their rule over you, but rule for your well-being by securing your rights, not by wanting to give you things.
Yeah, and I can't remember who had the famous quote about once the people figure out they can vote for themselves unlimited largesse out of the public treasury, they'll keep voting for people that promise them more and more of that. So the first point being justice, equal rights for all, and special privileges for none. Is there kind of a number two here, David, in terms of what should we expect from our leaders?
Yeah, and I think the second thing that we should expect from them is not to increase faction, not to pit one group against another. And that's, I think, something that's going on to a great degree today, where we take up certain demographics and we say, I'm for this certain demographic because that's going to get me over the majority. I'm against this certain demographic because those people, so kind of pitting Americans against one another is something that the founders hoped would be discouraged in an extended republic where people thought of the public good in more clear terms.
And I think on that faction one, and George Washington said many things about that in terms of not wanting to have factions, you know, a little, I think some of that was a little Pollyanna-ish because we all do that. But ultimately, again, back to that kind of biblical moral worldview, when you love your neighbor as yourself, you tend to not think in terms of factions. You kind of decrease and other people increase in worth and you begin to look out for your neighbor. That's a really important one. People don't talk about that very often because having these deeply divided factions, David, as you know, provides more political power because you kind of play off of that. And that's that politics of division. Would you have another one after that? So we have justice, don't increase faction, which is very important but not talked about enough. Is there a third?
Well, and I think just encourage a model of lawfulness. We have a rule of law that we're asked to follow as citizens. We would ask the same of our leaders. We would ask them to model a certain way of going about their business. When they begin to try to cut corners, trample upon parts of the Constitution because they want a desired end, tomorrow, rather than through a regular legislative process, then what they've done is they've really harmed the whole notion of the rule of law by trying to go too far too quickly.
And then I have to ask you this question, and then we'll move on to ourselves as citizens. We'll turn that white hot spotlight of judgment off of them and onto ourselves. But the role of character in our elected officials, that's obviously a big deal this year, or perhaps not, depending on how you look at it. But speak to that, if you would, for a minute, the role of character.
Yeah, well, it gets to the point of who do you think you are and what will you do when power is given to you? An individual who sees themselves as being a created being equal to other created beings is not going to see themselves as a god and hold that godness of godliness over others, and is not going to see other people as beasts. So the right character that is formed from a right appropriation of where we stand in God's kingdom, God and men and our fellow men not being beasts, I think produces a type of character that allows for better leadership. We see this in corporations. We see this in small communities. This isn't a hard thing, but it's made more difficult by our desire to treat other people less than what they should be treated like and to think of ourselves to be more important than who we are.
Yeah, what a great point. Well, we're coming up on another break, David, but the opening salvo in the next 30 seconds for us as citizens, what's more important? What's important in terms of what should we expect from ourselves as citizens?
We should be the beginning and end of this whole reformation. To look to another is to hand off responsibility to the other. And yeah. Take that responsibility in your own hands. Yep.
What a great point. Dr. David Corbin, we'll be right back after this break talking about is the original intent, the original vision of our founding fathers in this representative republic dead and buried? No, not all the way, but it is close. We agree on that. But what about our role as citizens? It's our problem, not theirs. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. Just in case you were wondering if it's impossible for a 50-year-old follower of Jesus Christ to listen to cool music, well, there's your proof. Yeah, that's Maroon 5. We vary the music, the bump music here on Call to Action Radio. I like to say that I think we have the best Christian bump music, best bump music in Christian radio, and it's all over the map. So we just try to have a little, hey, it's okay to love Jesus, care about the country, and have some fun. It's okay if we loosened up a little bit and we became more winsome as followers of Jesus Christ. Perhaps we would have a little more mojo in the culture in which we find ourselves. So you take that one and mull over it. We're talking today with Dr. David Corbin, who teaches courses in American political thought and politics and literature at the King's College up in New York City. And it's been a great blessing every month to bring different professors on from the King's College. We've gone down a lot of different roads together, economics and philosophy and politics. And we get the president on every once in a while, Gregory Allen Thornberry. And it's just been a huge blessing. And no different in continuing the streak today with Dr. Corbin, obviously, as we talk about the original intent of the founding fathers and the Constitution and where we're at today. And that was a very sobering assessment, David, when I asked you how far away have we strayed on a scale from 1 to 10, and you said 9. And I agree. I think we're there right now. But I think one of the problems that we have is that we think we can just elect some people, send them up there, and they'll fix it all. But really, in this segment, as we're going to finish up our conversation today, what do we expect from ourselves as citizens? I think that's the missing link here. Even self-identified Christians, David, and I'm sure you know this, 50% are registered to vote, 25% vote in an off-year in a presidential election, 12% in an off-year election, and only 5% in a primary. So we have an electorate and a citizenry that, for the most part, doesn't care enough to get involved. So what should we expect from ourselves, David?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're right to place politics within the grand scheme of life. In the sense that, you know, we realize that there are things more eternal. There's a city of God above the cities of men that is essential. It ought to capture our attention and how we live and how we think about things in this world. But I think that you're right. I think that what happens in this world is important, and what we do with what is happening in this world is essential, and how we understand what life we can expect or should expect in this world. I spent a lot of time in New Hampshire politics, and one of the things that happened every 4 years is we had presidential candidates that would come around and, you know, go to the local bakery, restaurants, et cetera. And it also led to inflated egos for people of the Granite State because we often saw presidential candidates every other day. But it was really funny when you'd be in those audiences where there was interplay between the presidential candidate and the resident sitting in some small town in New Hampshire. The president would ask questions, the presidential candidate would ask questions, and oftentimes you'd get a citizen saying, you know, I never take my garbage out, you know, the right day. It never gets picked up. What would you do about that? So there was this expectation at the local level that some presidential candidate is going to come in there and wow. Say, oh, well, under my plan, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, and you'll never have to worry with garbage never getting picked up again.
Wow.
But it really kind of was indicative of a certain sloth and expectancy, a dependency upon government that I think is troubling within the citizenry right now. We're hoping, like you said, that other people are going to do things for us. And I think the first step back to political independence is a proper expectation as to what life is going to be like. It's going to throw us a lot of difficult situations. We're not going to live in a perfect world because we're not perfect. These things, there are some problems that can never be solved. And oftentimes, the greatest problems that we're dealing with in life aren't a matter of not having the right candidate in place, but probably where our heart is at a certain time. Probably that we're not putting in an effort in whatever sphere we're in. I mean, we're not working, you know, with our kids enough or with our community enough or in our church enough. And I think we have to try to find those outlets that are political in the specific sense of elective office, but that are also political in the things that you do for the community that you live in, that will really kind of get you back in the habit of acting like a good American citizen. Voting is good, but there are a lot of things that happen those other days, every other 4 years, that are essential to good political life.
Well, I think, and I spoke recently at a local church all about Christians in politics and brought to their attention Jeremiah 29:7, which says also seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. And I certainly feel like I'm in exile in America these days. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. And I think for us as Christians, David, the notion of loving your neighbor as yourself, yes, we need to pray for our leaders. We're commanded to do that. Yes, I think we all have an obligation to vote, but also just this civic engagement and civic concern, which I think largely we're missing. Do you see this in the millennials that come through? It seems, David, like they have a little bit more of a heart, a little more interest in kind of making a difference, if I can use kind of that trite language.
They do, and I think that certainly the technological advances that have been put into place allow them on one level to see the stuff that is being done. But one trap, I think, of technology, it doesn't have to happen, but one trap of technology is that you see people doing these grand things and you forget about the little things that add up to a great thing. So oftentimes at the King's College, for example, when I'm dealing with a third or fourth year student, they want to go off to Washington, D.C. They want to be congressman at the age of 25, and then this and that and the other. And I say to them, you know, well, why is it that you want to just make these leaps, you know, and go from one job to the next to the next? Are you really endearing yourself to the mission that's at hand at 22, 25, 28. So I think for as much as technology can shine a great light on the good things that are happening and be an encouragement, an aspiration for these folks to do more, we've got to be careful that we don't forget as people all those small steps that make the world a better place. And they usually begin with what's going on in our everyday life. And I think that's sometimes what's lost in a millennial Facebook generation.
Yeah, absolutely. And you get Kony 2012, and let's go deal with this guy, this horrible creature that's over there in Africa that's butchering and killing and maiming people. Let's make him infamous. So that happens all over the world. While you don't even know your neighbor, we don't do anything down the street, we don't engage civically. And I think, again, with the loss of a biblically centered moral worldview, you just stop caring about your neighbors. You become the idol. You become the god. And then you just don't engage. You don't really care much about other people. So what are some practical steps you would say, David, and we only have a few minutes left, for just us as regular citizens, what would be your encouragement, your wisdom to us as how we can begin to do our part to try to turn this thing around and start to move back towards the original intent of our founding fathers?
It's a great question, and I don't think that that we're going to have the same answer for every single member of your listening audience. I think that we have to try to figure out, okay, what type of gift have we been given in civic or political terms? Is your gift something where you really do well one-on-one, you really do well tending to that elderly neighbor in need? If that's what you can do, you know, excellent. But maybe you have an ability through your business to do more for 10 or 15 people. Perhaps you're the type of person who can lead a Rotary Club. There are a million opportunities out there for you to be engaged in a civic and political way, and we're all different people with different bandwidths and different time and different economic situations. But finding those areas in which we can really participate with great purpose, civic purpose, and I think that rubs off on our children, it rubs off on our friends. And that's I think how communities begin to find a type of political and civic communion again. But we've all got to find, you know, where we can do it. I think that would be my first suggestion, Steve.
Yeah, and I think that's God's not going to hold ultimately all of us accountable for the people that we elected and put in office. He's going to hold us accountable for what we did with what he gave us. And so the world all of a sudden gets a lot smaller. It's your sphere of influence, your workplace, your neighborhood, your friends, your church, your community. And that's what God's looking. Hey, Steve, you know, quit putting it off on all the politicians. What did you do with what I have given you? I think that's a great word of advice and wisdom, David, that, hey, how has God gifted me? Where has he placed me? And begin to start making a difference as a citizen by being an excellent citizen. And if you call yourself a follower of Jesus Christ, to be an excellent citizen in his name. And then we show people the gospel as well as sharing with them the gospel verbally. And I think that's what we've largely missed. We put it all off on the government, and we don't do much with it ourselves.
And I think a second point, Steve, if I could make it, is a little more theoretical, but it's as essential. We can't give in to this cynicism that there is no such thing as a public or common good. I think living out good for another shows that the public good can be a reality. It's not going to happen at all times and all places. But if we give in to this, oh, everyone's just, you know, they're just politicians. It's just people being people. Well, it doesn't have to be that way. We're not going to be perfect. We're not going to live in some utopian setting. But a better possible is within our reach if we want to do what's right and know that there is a common good that can be done by doing what is right.
Yeah, and that's a great word of encouragement. For somebody like me, David, I'm swimming in this stuff every day and talking about it on the air most days of the week. And you get to the point, I'm like, hey, sign me up for the abandonment theology thing. Just let it all swirl down the toilet. It's all going to hell anyway, so who cares? But of course, that's a big part of the problem and not a part of the solution. That's a great way to kind of end our conversation. I definitely hope we can have you back on again, Dr. Corbin. You've been a great blessing. Bring great wisdom and knowledge to the table. We really appreciate you. Thanks so much for being with us today.
What a pleasure, Steve. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Okay, you're very welcome. We'll talk to you again. That's Dr. David Corbin, teaches American political thought and politics and literature at the King's College, TKC. .edu, and no, they're not paying me to say that on the air. I really believe in what God is doing there. I've seen it for myself face to face. If I didn't, my daughter wouldn't be there. My wife and I wouldn't agree to have her there, but we really see the blessing of God on that school. And that's what we need. We need people that are being taught how to think and engage at a deep level and then bring the Christian worldview with them in front, in the middle, and behind, and winsomely impact the culture with that kind of teaching. It's just an awesome thing. TKC.edu. This is Steve Noble of Call to Action, and God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.